Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 12th of January, recording at 8:58 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the four asset classes. But first, as usual, a quick review of the week. Stock markets, which have been choppy recently, ended the week on a strong footing, mainly yesterday and today. And the only exception, I think, really, among the important markets, the only exception would be China, which had become well and truly overextended after that upside acceleration. Government bonds, pretty well weak across the boards. And the U.S. dollar extended its rally, although it has faltered here a little bit today, hardly surprising. And oil prices, that is possibly the biggest of the big stories this week. And oil plunged, although as did natural gas, although they are both up today. Crude oil is up a dollar as I speak. And the precious metals, they had been soft, but had a gangbuster day in here today. Silver up 45 as I speak. Platinum up 12 and a quarter. Gold up $14.6. So some hefty, hefty gains in here today. That put upward dynamics certainly on the gold and silver charts. And the industrial metals, they had taken a beating last week and at the beginning of this week had a big rebound yesterday, but are all down a bit today. And what else to mention? Last but not least, we had an explosive move on the upside in the grain and bean complex today. And those contracts had touched support levels in some instances, or initial support levels, and rocketed on a report which I haven't read in detail, but I gather it was a government report saying that there were some risks that stockpiles would run out. Okay, so what do we make of it all on a, well, moving from a short to a particularly longer term basis? Global stock markets, the trends are still up. Yes, some become overheated periodically. I mentioned China, both the A shares, well, all the Chinese indices, and therefore the H shares out of Hong Kong. But I don't see any evidence that the global bull move proper, which certainly includes most stock markets, the oil producers, Middle Eastern oil producers are the main exceptions following their burst bubble last year. And the important point is that I don't see any evidence that this is about to end. Now, I know there have been some very high profile bearish calls, which will not have escaped your attention, but I'm not joining that crowd because the evidence that I see suggests that these markets are going to go higher. There's still plenty of liquidity sloshing around. I think that's pretty obvious as well. Government bond yields, which concern me the most in terms of the sustainability of this bull run, are rising, but they're doing so gradually, and at this stage, that's a tailwind for stock markets as people shift money out of government bonds, out of all fixed interest sectors, and into equities. At some point, though, that will become a problem. The low oil price is very bullish for the global economy. Oil producers accepted, and they're not doing all that badly. at these prices. Now, that's important as far as the global economy is concerned, because so many people were, I think, overemphasizing the U.S. housing slowdown, and then they were very bearish regarding the inverted yield curve in the United States. It's been going on for some time, as you know. We've had this talk, but I don't agree. I maintain that actually the global economy is getting a second wind from the low oil price and remains in a period of synchronized period of economic expansion. So that's pretty good overall. I do think looking further ahead, a more intermediate term basis, that inflationary problems have always felt that that's going to be the problem, not dramatic increases in inflation, but all that money printing, all that credit creation, the asset appreciation that we've seen. There are an awful lot of dollars sloshing around the system, and yuan and yen and euros and you name it. Everybody's been playing the printing game. There are no virgins in that respect, and it's just that some central banks are more profligate than others. But there's a huge amount of money, and so it's hardly surprising that some of that flows into stock markets. And I maintain that governments aren't going to be squeezing too much. They'll jawbone a lot as far as inflation is concerned, and they will be emboldened to hike rates if stock markets are firm and GDP growth is doing reasonably well. We saw that yesterday with the Bank of England, and no doubt we'll see it before too long from the European Central Bank. Meanwhile, I maintain that the Fed just sits on its hands monitoring events. I find it very hard to envisage a major squeeze coming from the Fed anytime soon, and that's what would cause the real trouble. And I don't see a major squeeze occurring anywhere in the globe anytime soon, although people will talk about that and fear that, and I think misread a number of the runes regarding what's going on in terms of liquidity. But the canary in the coal mine regarding liquidity will always be the performance of these various asset markets, and they're telling us that there's plenty of liquidity around. So, and the US dollar, that could become a problem at some stage, but it certainly isn't today. The dollar has really been quite firm. Remember, no country wants a strong currency in this environment, but I'll talk more about currencies in a moment. So, what then for stock markets? Well, I see the global bull basically carrying on through this first quarter. I probably will, well, my anxiety level will probably go up a little bit in April, as I know that we'll be approaching the period that seasonally is less attractive overall. Though to put that in perspective, this is third year of the U.S. presidential cycle. On average, that is the most bullish year of the 4 year of the 4 year cycle. Why April? Well, because we saw that very big downdraft. Well, for some markets, it was smaller for the U.S. Some markets fell by a third or more. That downdraft that we saw in May and second half of May and the first half of June last year. Now, a number of people will be wary of that time period, not surprisingly. Lightning seldom strikes twice in markets at the same time, but they will be worrying about that. And therefore, there might be some precautionary selling before we actually get into May or in early May. We'll see. We'll see. It's hard to gauge, and a lot will depend on how well markets do in the meantime. So I think the risk, such as it is one of of a bit more volatility in here, but that markets move higher. I've said before that I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see another medium-term correction in 2007. We may not see it, but I wouldn't be that surprised to see it. I do not see that as being imminent. That's the more important point. And if we do get a correction, I think it will be different from the one we saw in May and June. I think it would probably be slower and occur over a longer time span before the low was reached. It was really incredibly hawkish comments from central banks who suddenly all ganged up at the same time with all the Fed governors repeating big inflation warnings that caused markets to go through that bit of a panicky phase last year. So I think we're less likely to get a repeat of that, but we could get a slower, somewhat longer medium-term correction, and I certainly think we'll get a bit of volatility within what is generally a bullish year. So that's nothing to, the risks, I think, are not something to lose sleep over at this stage. I do not see a bear market commencing in 2007. That's the really important point. We may not get one in 2008. I think, I mean, there's plenty of time to revise, and situations are constantly changing and evolving and so on, but I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see really bearish action until 2009 and particularly 2010. That's what I have in mind, but long way to go before we reach that point. In the meantime, so not to be complacent, we all of us hopefully monitor the action in here as it continues to unfold, and if the script needs to be it's revised from time to time, as is inevitably the case, and then I do so, and perhaps we all do so. Okay, in terms of themes, I really do like the Asian theme. That is the strongest one right now. But stock markets certainly are getting the lion's share of the action at this stage, outperforming property, and I think that will continue to be the case. And again, I would expect Asian stock markets to remain at the fore. Now, another group that I have really, really liked since that first quarter of 2003 is the commodities related to the resources sector, and therefore those resources exporting global stock markets. Now, I don't think they will come off the boil, but they will not perform in 2007 in all likelihood quite as well as they performed previously. And I think the reason for that is that the oil price decline has certainly increased bearishness as far as the commodities are concerned. And industrial metals, I've said, were always prone to medium-term corrections following the phenomenal moves that they saw last year. And copper, which everyone seems to focus on the most, is certainly very much in. I think it's seen most of its medium-term correction. But that point is that really causes people to extrapolate that across the sector. And again, it would not be surprising if industrial metals don't do that well this year. But I maintain that they are in these secular bull markets. And then, of course, sentiment towards the whole resources area has deteriorated because gold and silver, all the precious metals really, but gold and silver, which were going gangbusters this time last year and just roared into that May period, were way outperforming stock markets and then fell back very, very sharply. And they're looking more interesting now, but the point I'm trying to make here is that sentiment has changed regarding these resources, and that is certainly a factor in the short term, and quite possibly in the medium term that does weigh upon it. But just as we've seen this very powerful action here today in the precious metals, and I think that will certainly generate some follow-through next week, where we have already seen the corrections, and these resources are arguably cheap, at least from my perspective, then there is quite a bit of upside potential. So I think the sector remains extremely interesting. My biggest reservations would have to be over oil, and I wrote a lot about that last night. And that, again, to repeat a point, that does affect sentiment regarding the overall sector. But even considering the oil shakeout, which has been bigger than I had expected when it commenced a sort of a predictable medium-term correction. So that bigger move does cause me to question the long-term merits of some of the oil funds that I hold. But I've got to say, at this stage, I still think when I look at the demand and where that demand is likely to come from and the persistence, the one thing that we can guarantee in an uncertain world, I would argue, is increased demand for energy as these, not least because of the synchronized global economy in a period of economic expansion, but the tremendous growth of these previously moribund emerging economies, and that's adding hugely to the consumption of energy, and that's a trend that is going to grow very, very dramatically for a number of years, short of a serious global recession, which I don't think's on the cards, or some environmental disaster of biblical proportions, and I'm not in the business of forecasting that, although we could all guess as to what that might be fairly easily. Okay. So that's it for stock markets. Government bonds, one really ought to be playing these from a short position, the main exception being up until we get clear medium-term corrections in global stock markets or worse, and then one would want to be buying the bonds for temporary rallies. But government bonds are in secular bear markets. You see that in the long-term charts that you find in the library. I've mentioned this so many times. There's too much debt around, and too much debt means that central banks go on churning out vast amounts of liquidity to keep all that debt from imploding, and all that liquidity that has created some inflation in various assets, financial and non-financial assets, such as, well, pictures, jewelry, you name it, property, you name it. And that liquidity can also only create some growing inflationary pressures. And those inflationary pressures, I maintain, on a long-term basis, will continue to gradually outweigh, in terms of importance, the deflationary pockets which have been created by globalization, the abundance of cheap labor, and so on. But it'll be a slow process, so I don't expect any kind of inflation disasters anytime soon, but I'm just identifying a long-term trend here, as this is the big picture audio. And therefore, we should expect inflation to gradually rise in an erratic fashion, in other words, in a series of rolling waves, not any sort of linear action. And it's been subsiding a little bit recently, for the most part, incidentally. And as again, oil price helps. But it will gradually rise. That's bearish for government bonds. So something I've mentioned many times in these audios is that when the government, long-dated government bond yields are rising, and that is the case now, those rises will go higher than the previous rises. Now, we've already seen that with UK gilts, Australian bonds, if they haven't already done it, are close to doing so. The euro bunds are not that far away from doing so. US bonds lagging in that respect, but they will do this also, so that they will move in the up phases for those yields. They'll move to above the previous highs, and in the downward phases for yields, they will bottom above the previous important low. So that's the outlook. Therefore, I mean, if I weren't spoiled for choice in terms of a number of long positions in here in these markets, I would have a number of short positions in these government bonds, and I could certainly justify having them right now. Okay, looking at the currency situation, I've emphasized over and over again, no country wants a strong currency. And obviously, no country wants the dollar to collapse. The US would be very happy, I feel, to see a gradual easing of the dollar. Trouble is, these things speed up, and then other central banks get alarmed, and even the US Treasury and central bank will become alarmed. And I wouldn't be surprised if Trichet hasn't engineered a move to sell the euro down a bit here recently. It's been noticeably weak after all that talk that people were diversifying into euros, and the French and others were complaining about it. So, complaining about the strength of the euro. So, no country wants a strong currency, and all I said there are no virgins in terms of this massive printing of money. It's just that some central banks are a little bit more profligate in this respect than others, and the US is among the more profligate. But Japan, China, they're right up there too in the profligacy department, says the Indian Central Bank. So this is an important trend. Now, what that means is, in terms of foreign exchange rates, that we will get choppy action more often than not. We will not get big moves relative to what occur in stock markets, let alone commodities. That will not happen. And interest rate differentials will remain a very, very important factor. And that's why the yen carry trade is going to continue really for quite some time. And people keep thinking that the yen carry trade's about to end. When the yen carry trade does end, and I think that's a long way down the road, that will be extremely bearish, I think, for markets. And I don't assume that there will be some other carry trade that people will pick up immediately, such as the Swiss franc, which is often rumored, but that is loosely allied with the euro. So I don't see it. I don't see it happening. The yen is the main carry trade, and if it ceases to become a carry trade, then I think we'll see a major liquidity contraction. Okay, or it would impinge. If you don't describe it as liquidity contraction, it would certainly weigh on all these high-flying markets that hedge funds and others are involved in. Now, the fact that no country wants a hard currency, the fact that there are no virgins in terms of this massive printing of money is concerned, does mean, of course, that gold and its sister precious metals, particularly silver, but also platinum, less so palladium, But these are regarded as currencies by investors, safe stores of money, rather than exchangeable currencies. So that is the long-term secular bull market story for the precious metals. But a point that I made yesterday or the day before, that these are non-yielding currencies, and if you're dealing in futures, not only do you not have the yield, but you have the contango. So when they're not moving up, a lot of people are understandably going to take profits. But the long term, so these will be volatile, but the long-term trend is upwards, and I expect that long-term trend to reassert itself at some point this year. And so I really do like these precious metals. It's required patience in recent months because they've been underperforming a number of other assets. But that's the story. That's the way the game unfolds. You get a long consolidation period of underperformance, lasts for months, and then that eventually supports a major surge to new highs. That's the type of environment I see. Industrial metals, I've talked about copper. I think probably this correction is mostly over. For copper, I've talked about the risks of medium-term corrections in some of the other metals. The surprise, really, and I think I've been as big a bull as anyone in terms of this sector, the surprise is that they've moved so high, and that markets such as zinc and nickel and what's the other one that is a lead have stayed so high for so long. Now, people would say, well, come on, there's shortages of these materials, difficult to produce, and so on. I know all that. But nevertheless, the gains were breathtaking. So inevitably, we have to expect a number of medium-term corrections. But I maintain that this is a secular bull market. Just look at the demand trend for these resources. The infrastructure development around the globe, led by China, is going to continue for decades. And as these countries become more wealthy, then, and we're talking about huge populations in a number of these countries, then you get these new and increasingly prosperous middle classes that want all the consumer goods, that require plenty of metals and so on. It's a familiar story, but it's a story that I never tire of repeating, and more importantly, for you, it's a story that I think is going to run and run and run, and yes, they'll be volatile. So that leads on now to this grain and bean complex. I have been saying that they were consolidating, they were experiencing medium-term consolidations, and medium-term can be anything from a few months, which it has been, to a couple of years, although seldom more than three. Well, I don't expect that long. A consolidation for the I ne never expected that a very long consolidation for these grains and beans, because they only really leapt into action a few months ago, and have very, very large base formations underneath them. And there's the fundamental driver. There always has to be the fundamental driver. This isn't just hedge fund activity, although they're certainly involved. But the hedge funds, they don't buy and hold this stuff. They buy it to sell it later, and that keeps the market more liquid than it would otherwise be. That applies to any of the things they do. They're really traders much more than buy and hold types. But the important fact here is that demand for these agricultural commodities is rising very sharply. Global stockpiles have been run down, and we have the vagaries of weather, and really that's going to lead to some powerful spikes on the upside, and we're starting to see that. And I think today's action is eloquent testimony to the fact that The recent action represented no more than a pullback in consolidation, and that these markets are going higher. And I think that's pretty much it in terms of what I wanted to cover here with you today, although that same story would apply to some of the other agricultural commodities as well. So I will just wrap up here and say, what an exciting week. I could almost do with a little bit less excitement, but well, not really. And all the very best to you, and see you next week.